This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Live from Seahawks training camp, powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob coming to you live from Virginia Mason Athletic Center as the Seahawks continue with practice day two. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Our Seahawks training camp coverage is presented by Precor Home Fitness. Day two, Dave, they're out there running around and just to set up the show for people, more importantly for you, because coming up at 3 o'clock, it's really Christmas come early. And if you want me just to step aside, put the mic down, and let you go solo, I'm happy to do it. Cody Barton will join us at 3 o'clock.
I have a feeling we're going to get lots of texts.
So you let me know how you want me to handle it. I'm happy to step out of the way and just let you take over. 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton will be with us. And then coming up at 5, Paul Moyer may or may not be in person. Who knows? Rumor is he could be here in person currently, but may leave before his appearance.
He is going to come on the phone with us at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
We're going to call him on the bat phone, phone number 3.
Okay.
And then I think Paul's out here, and so we're going to try to get him to drop by. I can't wait to see all the texts that will come in. Wyman, are you going to ask him on a date? And are you guys going to the movies later? All that stuff. But he's a good player, I'm telling you. And then, you know, there's been a lot of discussion. I was talking to a couple other reporters today, and I think, you know, people are kind of looking at the linebacker position right now because – you know, Ben Burkervin played very well. I was asked quite a bit about him. And here's what I said. When you're in the right place and you do the right thing all the time, you're going to make plays. And that's the thing with him. I watched him really carefully against the Jets. He had maybe 15 plays, something like that. But, again, and he had a great year on special teams, him and Cody Barton both. But, you know, there's lots of talk about Ben Burkervin, lots of talk about Cody Barton, of course, and then, you know, possibly Daryl Taylor playing a little bit of outside linebacker. So now all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of funny, the sort of buzz around camp every day, there's something different. But I think this is going to be fun this year because, you know, linebacker's pretty set, right?
Yeah,
pretty much
set. Seems like it, but we thought that before they drafted Jordan Brooks.
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, they were incredibly deep there. So, yeah, now all of a sudden, you know, who's going to get on the field is really, you know, the question there. But then, you know, we've got defensive pass rush. I was watching these guys rush the passer. Alden Smith, I just saw him do something I don't think I've ever seen before.
There's about that sled.
That sled, I can tell you, weighs at least 250 pounds, maybe closer to 300.
Really?
So he punched that thing, popped it up in the air, and then just kind of flipped the entire thing over on its side.
Yeah, I was watching it. We were there, and Brady was there. He goes, you ever see anybody do that?
And he almost hurt himself one time because, you know, he did it twice and it almost flipped over and hit him, but he hopped over it quite handily there, no problem. So, I mean, and he's really good off the ball. So it just, that's what we're looking at right now, though. I mean, we're looking at guys in jerseys and shorts and helmets. And so we're just looking at speed, quickness, getting off on the ball. And he's got a really explosive get off as far as, you know, when they're out here trying to draw him off sides, and he's timing it up really well. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, you look at that. I mean, you're just the collection of them right there, and you're trying to add up the sacks. You got Taylor, you got Smith, you got Hyder Jr., you got Mayoa. Just looking at Dunlap, I mean, that's, again, we've talked about it. You don't have the guy who's going to give you 15 sacks, 16 sacks, that J.J. Watt guy in his prime, but collectively, this feels like this could be, if everybody can stay healthy, this could be a really productive group, a collection of players right there.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you look at Dunlap. What did he get, 8 last year? 9? And then right next to him is Kerry Hyder, who got 8. There's Rasheem Green, who got 4. You know, Kerry Hyder, or Benson Mayoa, who got 4 or 5 and just made plays all over the place. So, yeah, it's probably going to be by committee, but it's a pretty talented group. Benson Mayoa, what stands out to me is just his quickness and his hustle. I love the way that guy plays.
Yeah.
It's a good group. And, you know, again, we're not watching full pads. We're not watching, you know, a game-like situation. But The other thing I would say about this team, Bob, they practice so efficiently. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of practices you see are kind of, oh, okay, let's go over and do this. They sprint everywhere. They know exactly what they're doing. You know, there's never any confusion. They have – it's a very well-organized camp and practice that they run out here.
Is Robinson over there?
Yeah, that was another guy. I was going to say Alton Robinson also. What, you get four sacks last year?
What number is he over?
He's 98. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, that's another guy that is part of the committee there. So, and he was trained expertly by our guy Cliff Averill. And, you know, he's...
That's really the key to his success.
Yeah, that's right. So
I think that's been made clear.
Well, you know, it's funny. Cliff told us about that last year. He said, hey, I'll tell you somebody to keep your eye on because, you know, Alton Smith was a fifth rounder in 2020. And, you know, there was something about him that stood out. And I think I remember the thing that Cliff said was that he just soaks up information like a sponge and stays after and asks questions and he's curious. And, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, all he does is ask questions and listen. So, you know, I think that really helped him last year. I think the other thing, too, we talked to him last year, and I was giving him praise for a reverse that he blew. He didn't blow it up, but he foiled it. It was from the Cowboy game, and he was able to, you know, disrupt the play, and he was mad at himself for not making the tackle. No. So that's the kind of guy you want as a rookie, to have that kind of he's conscientious about what he does and make sure he does right all the time. Like I was saying with Ben Burkervin, when you're in the right place and you do what the defense calls for and what the coaches tell you, you're putting yourself in a really good position to make plays.
Yeah, looking at the linebacker group, the defensive line, the ends, the interior, and the safeties – and this is assuming Jamal Adams gets everything worked out and he's out there playing. Really, the only question for me on defense is the cornerbacks. What is that going to look like? But having said that, even with that question, the idea that they would be anything even in the same hemisphere as the way they started last year defensively would be shocking to me. With the group that they've got together, you got guys coming back. You get a full season of Dunlap here. You know, Alton Robinson has that rookie year under his belt. Just the experience they gained. You bring in Hyder. The idea that they'd be anything close to what they were to begin the season, when we were all going, what is happening here? This is just atrocious. It feels like that's almost impossible. Assuming health, the only questions I have pertain to the cornerback position.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that in my mind. It wasn't so much, you know, I sent you a couple of clips last year, Bob, where just guys were out of position and out of place. I thought it was more about that because remember, was it week 7 or 8? Whatever it was, it took too long for them to have this meeting, but they had the accountability meeting.
Yeah.
Remember, it was before the Arizona Cardinal game, and, you know, guys were standing up saying, hey, look, we got to do this, we got to do that. And, you know, we saw that kind of stuff out of, like, KJ and Bobby all year, that they were, you know, instructing guys and, you know, getting guys lined up and stuff like that. But, you know, not the entire team. They just weren't playing together. You can have the best players in the world out. You can have a Pro Bowl team out there on the field. If they're not playing together, you got two guys dropping in the same zone. Are you kidding me? You can't do that in the NFL. So yeah, that was kind of some of the stuff that was going on back then. But I just feel like talent-wise, they had plenty. And when they traded for Dunlap, I was actually surprised because that was about midway through. And, you know, people were talking about him. I'm like, I'm sorry, it's not a talent problem. It was about them playing together. But thank God they got Dunlap, and, you know, and he really contributed. But, yeah, I thought a lot of it was just not playing together. And maybe, you know, maybe that was because of the practices and what they had last year and they didn't have enough time to work together. So, you know, maybe that'll change this year.
Yeah, And we may get to this later on in the show, but just the idea of the offense, you know, people talking about, you know, I don't know if it's going to be synced up right away. It could take a few weeks before they really find their footing. And I'm looking at that and thinking, well, all right, you do have a full training camp this time. You do have your full complement of what preseason games are now, which is 3 instead of 4. Is that not enough time to go out there and not screw it up? I mean, I get that you're each week you're going to be more familiar, be more natural and second nature. But the idea that, I don't know, just sort of the conversation around the offense makes it sound like they could be out there running into each other on plays and, you know, oh, man, I didn't know. I thought it was this call when it's that call. Like, they're just going to be confused for a while. That seems to be overstating things to me.
Yeah, it totally is. Because, look, first of all, I think most of these guys and coaches have seen pretty much every play. that there is to run, you know? I mean,
right.
Unless somebody comes out with, like, the single wing or something. But still, you just – and I remember coaches doing that on the board going, hey, look, what if they come out in this? What if they come out in that? Tom Catlin used to do a great job with this. He was our old defensive coordinator, and he said he would have a what-if period. So he would explain everything, and, all right, okay, what are the what-ifs? And so we would throw all this stuff. Well, what if they line up like this? Well, what if they line up like that? What if they motion this guy? And you just – you know, and it makes sense. You've got the B-gap. Right. And so it doesn't change if, you know, these guys go in motion. Same thing on the offensive side. It's not like this is some new offense that nobody's ever seen. Mm-hmm. The only trip up, Bob, to answer your question, I think would be is if the dialogue isn't the same and it doesn't match up. But these guys sit in so many meetings.
Like the terminology when you went to Denver and they called it
different things.
Green or blue or whatever.
But I mean, how long does that take? I mean, it took like a day. Or two, maybe a couple times, like, oh, yeah, that's green instead of split, whatever. So there's Jamal Adams walking towards us every once in a while. You think if we'd yell at his name, he'd say hey?
Yeah, probably. He's a friendly, see, he's waving at people.
He's waving at, he's not waving at us. What's up, Matt?
What's up? He's smiling. He's happy.
Anybody that yells at him, he'll yell back. I was just testing him out there because
I was just waving at him, and he looked up. And
he's over there watching practice. People are yelling, Jamal, and he turns around, waves. Everybody gets a wave from Jamal.
I feel good about his presence here. I know we talked about it yesterday, but again, it could easily go the other way where he's not here. Ongoing discussions. We hope to get it done, but right now he's working out on his own at his home in blah 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 state. And you're just like, oh boy.
Well,
he's there in the huddle right now. He's there in the huddle. He's not. He doesn't have the helmet. He's not participating on that level. But I think that should not be lost on fans. The fact that he is here, he's on the field. There he is. The hands are together. He's part of the whole process right now.
Well, and that's the thing when you get around people, and that was the thing that was so weird last year. And I tried to keep saying this, like try to think the best of people, even though you can't see them. Because when you're around people, you see, oh, okay, they're not overreactive, panicky jerks. They're actually just people just like you are. And that's the thing. I think being here, being present, being around people that, you know, it just confirms that most people are good and that most of these kinds of situations right here are going to get worked out. And when you see Jamal out here, I mean, having seen that right there, Bob, you know, and him yelling at us and the fans and everything, what do you think the percent chance is that he doesn't get a deal here and that they get, you know, go after each other and it's a big, ugly mess?
2%.
Yeah, I was going to say way less than 10, because why would he be here? You know, why would he be here with a big smile on his face, happy to be here? I guarantee you they're getting something done. We talked about it yesterday. They've been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah, it just tells me maybe they're close. They're close. I think if they were, if it was like, listen, we're not even in the same world right now. I'm not. There's no point in me being there if we're not even close to getting anything done. Right. The gap is way too. We got to bridge this huge gap. That his presence here just tells me there. It's close. It's certainly a friendly situation. It's not adversarial. So I love seeing that. I don't worry about Dwayne Brown one bit about him not participating. That's a guy that you manage. They did it for years with Marshawn. How many times were we out here? And Marshawn wasn't practicing. He'd be here, but he wasn't doing anything.
Walter Jones, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you've had those individuals throughout the years, whether it's because they're dealing with an injury or you're starting to just sort of try to regulate the activity because they're getting older. Whatever the reason is, they've done a great job with it. It's never been problematic, even with, again, somebody like Marshawn who's got a problematic personality at times. They manage that perfectly. And Dwayne Brown, whether he's practicing, not practicing, that's one I don't even consider. I don't even think, oh, my God, what are they doing? What's he doing? How come they're not doing this? Absolutely trust their judgment with him.
Look at 75 and 78 standing there. Okay, so that's Stone Forsythe and Greg Island from Mississippi State. And Forsythe, of course, the guy that that we drafted in the fifth round from Florida.
He's shorter
than
Island.
They're huge.
Island's taller than he is.
They're both 6'8".
He looks like a basketball player, Island.
6'8". I mean, you know, and I think that's kind of interesting because Havenstein and Whitworth down in L.A., those guys are both 6'7", 6'8". So you just don't see a lot of guys that big. I think Jonathan Ogden was maybe 6'8". But, you know, there's kind of a leverage problem when you get that tall. But, you know, I don't think they have a problem with it. And looking at those guys and that offensive line right there makes me glad I'm sitting over here, Bob.
Yeah,
those guys
are some big dudes. And Shell out there, number 70, that's a large fella as well.
Yep.
So this is they're not lacking size.
Are you feeling good about the offensive line is the question, Bob? Going into this season.
Yes. I was pleasantly, Yapati aside, and I complained a lot about him to you. But him aside, he's been replaced by a guy who's a Pro Bowl caliber guard in Gabe Jackson. To me, the only question mark on this line is Posick. Is he going to be what we saw in the first half, or is he going to be what we saw in the second half? Because I thought it was really a tale of two seasons for him. He's shown he can be a very good center in this league. He's shown that. He showed it last year. He also showed he could get used and have some bad moments, and that it felt like that sort of started happening, and that's the most recent memory we have. So he is really my only question, and we've seen him succeed. So it's not even that big a question. I'd love to see a competition. It feels like it's kind of his job to lose, I guess, but there doesn't seem to be an obvious competitor for that spot with him right now.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, there's you're looking at some backup guys and guys that play guard and center just like he does. So the other thing is, you know, I'll be worried if he's not out here in pads when they come out in pads. They're not in pads right now, like we said, and he's watching. He doesn't have a helmet today, and that's the second day in a row that he hasn't practiced. But yeah, I mean, anytime you miss practice, it's always a concern. That's something I'll always bring up. When you miss practice, it's trouble because, and I'm not, you know, giving him the death sentence or anything like that. It's just that coaches want to be able to, they want to be able to trust you. And where do you build trust? You build trust in the classroom or in the meeting room and out on the practice field.
Yeah. A couple things from Pete talking with the media, some things we just touched on. Cut number one, him giving his thoughts on the Adams deal getting done.
The conversations have been ongoing for some time and been very amicable. He's in a good place. You know, they've worked really hard to this point. I'm very hopeful that it's going to get taken care of here soon, very soon.
Sounds optimistic. They're in a good place, amicable. And that lines up with what we're seeing out here, so that's good news.
And if it was just that, I would maybe be a little skeptical because Pete's always going to be positive, and he's
right.
Always going to, but if you couple that with what we see out here with Jamal Adams waving and he's happy and he's here with his teammates, that sounds good.
Cut number two, here he is being asked about Duane Brown's contract situation.
Is there still any talks about a contract with him?
We're not talking right now about that.
Nope.
He's not talking about Duane's contract.
Okay.
Doesn't want to discuss it. Not sure what that means. We'll see. I wish it was more of a Jamal Adams response, but all right, for the time being, we'll put that one to the side. I don't love that. I'm not panicking, but I don't love hearing that. And then the last one, just talking about some of the battles, position battles that they've got going, especially on the O-line.
Kyle Fuller's ready to battle with Posick, and Cedric Abouye is ready to battle with Brandon at the right side. We've got some young inside guys that are battling. Simmons is going to battle, and Phillip Haynes looks really good, by far the best he's looked. He's in great shape right now, so he'll have a chance to battle for, you know, for how much they can play.
Abouye? I thought it was Obuehi. Which one is it?
That's a way he, as far as I know. You know what? Let's wait till 4 o'clock and ask the professor.
He'll get it straightened out for us. No problem at all. Abouye.
We'll be calling him Abubu.
So he said Kyle Fuller is battling at center with Posick. Okay.
And he said Phil Haynes looks as good as he's ever looked.
I don't know what Phil Haynes looks like.
Yeah,
I don't know what he looks like out there on the field.
He's part of that 2018 draft.
Yeah. Was he a fourth-rounder?
Yeah.
Fourth-round pick.
And they've talked about him as being very promising. So, yeah, we'll see how that works out.
All right. Let's take two.
Well, Zach Wilson and the Jets have agreed to a deal. The number two pick was the last rookie to sign and did miss the Jets' first two training camp practices, but now has a deal in place worth $35.1 million, and $22.9 million is his signing bonus.
You know, I sent you guys an article last night about him because it was whoever wrote the article was talking about what the Jets were trying to do, which it sounded like they were trying to break away from some of the norms in terms of the language or you know, trying to push money into another year as opposed to how it normally goes. It was a little convoluted, but I walked away from it going, well, it sounds like the Jets are trying to get over on this guy on some level. Like, no, normally it's done this way, but we're going to try to push this into 2022. And apparently that wasn't flying with Zach Wilson and his representative saying, no, this is not going to happen. And They got it done. But it was interesting. I was like, this is why nobody wants to play for the Jets. These guys are slotted. This should not be a problem. This is not really that big of a negotiation at this point, yet they were trying to slip something through the cracks and push some of his money into next year.
Okay, I'm sorry. Was he the number two pick in the draft?
Yes.
Yeah. You get that guy in camp the first day.
Especially if you're the Jets.
Yes. I mean, and you have that kind of reputation. I don't understand that at all. So I'm really happy for the kid. Can you imagine $23 million? What would you do with $23 million?
Well, some of that's an injury guarantee, Dave. We'll see what the real numbers look like.
And tell you what, I know I give a lot of it to you.
That's right. That's
I would become a total idiot. I would be the worst person in the world, and I would have to give all my money away because it ruins people. No, I'm kidding. But, yeah, I mean, I do not understand that at all, that they would do that. And you're right. It's the Jets. So I guess it shouldn't be a surprise.
Well, we have a rapidly evolving MLB trade deadline. Joey Gallo to the Yankees was officially announced earlier. Rangers get four prospects back. And then about an hour ago, Ken Rosenthal broke the news that the Padres are acquiring Max Scherzer from the Nationals.
Jeez.
They are just loading
Holy
up.
Mackerel. They are.
They better win.
Seriously, with everything, that is, talk about go for it now. I mean, Scherzer is 37 years old. Still, obviously, a very good pitcher, but that's not a future move. That's a, we're doing this now. We've paid Machado. We've paid Tatis. We've paid Hosmer. These guys are spending a lot of money. And, yeah, if you're a Padres fan, you're walking around going, yeah, it's, if they don't win, I'm going to have questions.
They're in third place in their division.
Yeah, but the Giants have surprised everybody. Nobody expected that from the Giants. They've got the best record in baseball, and Dodgers right behind them, I believe. So, yeah, it's an interesting race, but boy, they are going for it. And then Gallo to the Yankees, he can strike out a bunch for them and hit home run. He's the sabermetrics dream. He strikes out a ton, but hits home runs. So one doesn't matter, and one is everything.
Right.
So there you go. So I'd like to see the Mariners' name come up in some of this stuff soon.
Well, I was going to say, is this going to set some unrealistic expectations for fans as far as why don't we do what the Padres are doing?
Well, you got the teams around. Houston's made a couple of moves already. The A's have made a couple of moves. Obviously, the Rangers aren't in it, but you know, I'm sort of anxiously awaiting some sort of news with the Mariners. Like, okay, are we gonna hear about somebody of note, or you know, yesterday it was like a AAA guy that was DFA that they picked up and sent to Tacoma. So far, not a lot of lightning going on.
We'll find out in the next couple days.
Yeah. All right. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, was the Scott Service ejection a result of Kendall Graveman getting traded? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob, live from the VMAC on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wyman and Bob,
live from Seahawks training camp
on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
You know, it's good to see you guys live rather than me watching you streamed while I'm doing the show, watching you ask me questions.
You're watching us?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to have to think about that.
Yeah.
He's watching our reactions.
No, I've seen you guys roll your eyes a few times like, oh, God.
No.
That's usually Dave.
The only thing we've ever done is laughed at a couple of times when you like the word inference. See, look, you can't even say it right.
Well, because it's different. I don't say the part, and you keep saying din, and I go, I have to remember to say the N in there to make it like you want it to be.
So there's only one N in the back side of it.
And so lately I've been going, difference.
There we go.
Watch out behind you. You're going to hit that. I hit that thing six times with my head yesterday.
That's our streaming camera.
I don't want to do that.
You're on the player hotline there. So what are you seeing out here, Paulie? What are you doing out here? First of all, you were doing something for the Seahawks?
Yeah, the Seahawks, we do a live stream. Not every practice. There's some restrictions on what we're allowed to do. What's really interesting is they had us upstairs. Really nice setup. In the past, we were always on the field or next to the field, but because the music that they play, they don't have the rights that, so we had to go up and pull the music off. But, you know, again, probably 4 or 5 days a week. You know, we stream about 30, 40 minutes and just tell people what's going on. And the first thing I noticed walking out here on the field, my goodness, Damian Lewis's arms are huge.
He's a big kid.
I don't remember him being that big last year. I mean, he's definitely put on some muscle, and that happens, Bob. I mean, these kids that everybody thinks, oh, they're 21, 22-year-old.
Right.
They should be in the greatest shape of their life, but mass takes time. And, you know, that comes, you know, when you're 23, 24, you know, all the way probably to your 27, and that's one thing I noticed there, that we're big.
We were talking about just the collection of bodies they've got rushing the passer, that there doesn't seem to be that one guy that's going to get you 15 or 16, but collectively, this feels like this. They could put up some numbers when you start looking at the names, and we don't know if Aldon Smith is going to play or not, but assuming he's there, Dunlap, Mayoa, Hyder, you know, Alton Robinson, it just – that's a nice collection of names that could get you 6, 7, 8 apiece. And when it's all said and done, you're over 40 sacks potentially looking at a really nice pass rush.
We talked about what's the biggest competition going into camp. And they were saying defensive backs. And I said, well, I think it is to find the starters and, you know, who are we going to count on? But I think the biggest competition is defensive line. There's so much depth, and who are going to be those guys that get 70% of the snaps? I know the Seahawks, and I'm pretty sure they did, they thought about this 17-game season going into free agency and building this defensive line, and that we can't play guys 80% of the snaps. Right. We got to play them 60, no more than 70, keep them fresh, injury-free. I'm really excited about it. And I think that was a huge turning point last year is – when our defensive line was getting sacks, I felt like the secondary trusted that the ball was going to come out and they could start jumping routes, and you saw our secondary play better. So, to me, it starts at that defensive line.
Hey, Paul, we were just Jamal Adams came walking over here. And I go, yeah, anytime a fan yells at him, he'll wave back. And so we start yelling at him, and he said, hey, what's up, guys? You know, all he seems super happy. So there's nothing that leads me to believe they're not going to get something done. But Bob asked me a good question yesterday. His deal is, like, does he just get in front of a jugs machine, or is it more his mentality? I was telling Bob that for me, I was always, you know, hitting guys and being physical, and then all of a sudden it's time, the ball's in there, and you got to be a finesse guy. And so is it that with him? Do you think it's his mentality, or does he just need to do something as simple as get in front of the jugs gun and just catch a bunch of balls? Because he's just not exactly what you would call a ball hawker.
Yeah. Well, some people just don't have quite the feel for the ball in the air. They just don't judge it as well. We see it in baseball with outfielders. They take better angles. It's just, I think you're born with it, but you can improve on it. And certainly the jugs machine. And then I think putting yourself in tough situations. DBs, they rarely are throwing the ball to us. You know, it's, you know, DK Metcalf, you know, 80% of the time, Russell Wilson hits him right in the numbers, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to practice that where my hands are going to be 80% of the time in that case. With DBs, I've got a hand or, you know, down below my knee. I've got to try all these different things, and I've got to do it at the last second. So to me, if I'm practicing, I don't look at the jugs. I turn my back to it, and then somebody say now, and then I want it right on top of me.
Gotcha.
So I got to adjust to the tough throws. And look, there's only so many things you can do during the day, you know, but that would be something that I think would help him.
Yeah, I mean, look at him out there. He's out there yelling. He's greeting him. Players as they come off the field making plays. It's just and I was trying to say to the listeners, you know, don't undersell his presence here and his interaction. And he was out there in the huddle, they got the hands together, and just to me that is nothing but good. It tells me there's no adversarial nature to this at all, that they're close. If they weren't close, he wouldn't be here. He'd be working out at home, wherever he works out in the offseason. If they weren't close, it'd be a different situation. This tells me I feel like we're going to hear about it soon.
Yeah,
that a deal's going to get done.
I mean, just, you know, reading between the lines from what Pete was talking about, and, you know, with Jamal being here, yeah, it's going to get done. It has to get done. I mean, they have too much vested in him. He's also young. I mean, is he the leader of the defense? I think Bobby's still that guy, but he's the next in line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you sign him for another 5 years, you know, he's plays into his 30s. I mean, he's going to be around here a long time. So that deal's definitely getting done.
Paul, you're sort of a I would say you're a DB expert, but your hobby is linebacker, I feel like. Yeah, and you have a lot to say.
I love linebacker.
So Cody Barton's coming here at 3 o'clock, and everybody's already texting me in that I'm going to ask him on a date because everybody thinks, oh, you're in love with Cody.
Are you?
He can play. The dude can play. Yes, I might be in love with him.
Where are you going to take him? You're going to take him to the movies, or you want some alone time, like a dinner?
This is not what I wanted from you.
We have people texting in asking if they could play the dating game theme when he comes on.
You got to.
Paul, I already get this from the texters. I don't need this from you.
Cody looked, he looked good. I just watched him at two or three plays. He looked again, they're all in shape, but as you get older and more mature, you start to get more cuts, and you do also fill out a little bit more. He looks great. I mean, that's the best shape I've ever seen him in. He's running really well. I was watching him just, simple things like, bootlegs, but again, he's looking up receivers. And, you know me on that one. That one drives me nuts when linebackers aren't looking up, especially play action, bootlegs, waggles, things like that. There are certain routes that are, played out 90% of the time, but he looks good, and they got him playing inside backer. So, look, he's the heir apparent.
Paul, it's good to see you. We're going to talk to you at 5, right?
Yep, at 5 o'clock I'll be back on. Not live, not face to face.
Okay. But, well, just pretend you didn't hear any of these questions because we're just going to ask them again.
I want to know where Dave asked Cody to go on a date. <That'd be fun>.
Find out at 3 o'clock. That's all coming up. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
There you go. There's Paul Moyer. He'll be back with us at 5 o'clock on the phone. He won't be here in person, but we'll talk to him at 5 o'clock. Coming up, Shane Waldron might be dealing with some unfair expectations. We'll explain what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, date night. Cody Barton will join us on the program.
Stop it. Now I got you and Moyer piling on.
The texter that said you ought to play the dating game theme song when he joins you. That's pretty funny.
See, now you're going to make it awkward between me and Cody. All right? We're good.
He's going to join us at 3 o'clock. Stay tuned for that. Seahawks out on the field right now as we continue our coverage from the VMAC here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We touched on the offense earlier, just talking about the idea that somehow they are going to be bumbling, fumbling team coming out of the gates, and it's going to be really complex and take them a while to get things going. We talked to Will Dissly yesterday, and I asked him about, just how familiar are you with it? How tough is it to learn? Cut number 7 areas, just talking about terminology and all of that.
It's definitely refreshing to hear it, for a second time. Obviously, I think OTAs was important, even if it was over Zoom, to just get that offense, get that verbiage. And now, it's easier to communicate. We have all the verbiage in. And so, while we're learning, our learning curve is a lot easier with all the information we have. It's kind of like, what did I miss round one? Round two, all right, I have all that nailed down, and we're just rolling now. So you can kind of tell, a lot of guys put in a lot of work, not just, preparing physically, but they've been in their playbooks. We came out day one just smoking, ready to roll.
How much time do you think you spend as a player on your own when you're not here on the field, just reading the playbook, just making sure, okay, especially with a new coordinator, if you remember that offense, going, okay, red means right, or whatever the terminology is. Now I've got to learn when he says right, it's this word, or when he wants us to go left, it's this word. And how much time do you think they're spending?
Well, off the field?
Yeah.
It's funny. I just found like 3 of my notebooks from when I played for the Seahawks. And I just had, we would install something. It would be in the playbook. But then I would take notes and write on all the little details and stuff on it. And so, I would go through those kinds of things. And I don't know if I had a regimen or anything like that, but, at night or, sometimes during a break or whatever, sitting at your locker, just going through stuff. The way they do it, and I'm sure they still do it this way, is that we used to call it you chalk it, walk it, talk it, chalk it, talk it, walk it. So you go, you put it in, you on the board, mm-hmm. and then you talk about all the what ifs and all that. Then you go outside and kind of go through a walkthrough, where they just put, cones or dummies for offensive linemen because they are. And then, and then you just put tight ends or, receivers or whatever, and this formation, and then you motion, and so by the time you get out on the field, you've pretty much done it. But yeah, you go through some of the stuff. I think I even saw a little section I had that was screw ups. Things that are hard for me.
Oh, okay.
Things that I couldn't remember, or things that I didn't get right during the week and had to, correct and stuff like that. So, It's really, that's what practice is all about. And so, like I said, once you get the terminology down, it's not that different. It's the hardest thing, I think, is going to be for Russell. But that's the one guy I want the most on, because Russ is one of the sharpest quarterbacks in the entire NFL. So just the way he's able to handle different formations, and you hear the way he talks about the game and everything. So, yeah, I think it will be fine. And a lot of this stuff, like I said, it's not like they're reinventing the wheel.
Right.
They're just running it from different formations, different motions, different concepts. You know,
is the expectation from the I mean, because you guys are pros. These guys are being paid a lot of money. Is the expectation, hey, we gave you this in OTAs. Now we're giving it to you in training camp. And when you show you, we get days off, whatever. When you get back here, we shouldn't have to sit here and go over this again. You should know what red means. You should know what this means.
Right. That's what gets guys fired. I mean, we sit there and watch pregames and, oh, yeah, he didn't make that play. Yeah, oh, he got beat here. And we sit there and talk about that's the reason. Half of the reason guys get cut is because they can't get it right. And they can't get it right in practice. Like I said, mention a lot about practice. And, you know, the thing I said about it today, usually I say it's lots of stuff that we don't see and the coaches do see. But what coaches want is to feel comfortable. They want the guys out there. It could be a lesser talent, whatever. You know, and that's what I was saying about Ben Burkervin. If you know that guy is going to do it no matter what, I don't care how big he is. I don't care how fast he is. If he can get to the right spot and read it right, I'm putting that guy on the field every single time. So, yeah, that's one of the – I think it's kind of an underrated reason why. I mean, we don't talk about it, but a lot of times – and the coaches won't say that. When they release somebody, they're not going to say, well, the guy's a dummy. You know, he can't get it. And, you know, they're never going to say that.
It'd be kind of funny if they did.
They just say,
talented, but he's a dope.
Yeah. So it's something that I think is, doesn't get said enough that's one of the main reasons. So, yeah, that's part of battling for a job. You know, it's not just the physical part of it. It's that you need to be able to go out there and get that stuff down and make your coach feel like I can call that in any situation and you're going to do it right.
Well, and it feels like, and you just touched on it, with somebody like Russell, who as a rookie was sending notes to other members of the offense on you know, things he think they should do or we should focus on this or whatever the notes were about. Just the idea that he was like, hey, guys, something for you to look at.
Not sure that went over well with Doug Baldwin.
No, or probably not just him, but just the idea that, yeah, I've never taken a snap in this league, but here are some things I think we could work on. You're like, whoa, Junior, hold on a minute.
Well, to be fair, I think he waited until like week two or three when he had played a couple of games.
Oh, was it? Okay. But still, having somebody with that mentality, though,
right.
When you've got a new offense coming in, if you're a receiver, a tight end, whatever position you are, and maybe you're feeling like, oh, man, this is a lot. This is to have somebody who you know is just buried in that playbook and learning it and is going to be maybe a second version of your offensive coordinator who can explain, no, when I say this, this is what you do. When I say this, this is what he does. Like, yeah. You just feel like he's just going to have it down if he doesn't already.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's like having a coach out on the field. So, and every once in a while you'll see quarterbacks, well, remember Dan Marino, he used to scream and yell at his receivers.
Oh, yeah.
Not running the right routes and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, they're on top of it, and, you know, that's something that I don't think we've ever seen Russell get demonstrably irritated on the field with another player.
The one time.
Yeah. Did he throw a ball or something?
I think you could see he was kind of yelling like, ah.
Is that the fumble in Cleveland?
Yeah, it was Procise, yeah. Right? He came, or Penny. Was it Penny?
No, it was Procise.
Somebody who had not been in the game, came into the game as a replacement, handed him the ball, he fumbled it immediately.
You know what, though? I think, first of all, that was the play where Rabel slammed his hand on the table very unprofessionally.
That was Penny, wasn't it?
I'm just joking. No, it was Procise.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, and no, it was so funny because Rabel never – I mean, he gets emotional in a good way, but, man, he was mad. He was like, dang it.
Russell both.
Yeah, and then – but, you know, I think also what came out of that, to be fair, is that I think Russ, he checked into that play. He checked out of another play and into that play, but so maybe he was mad at himself.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, yeah, we haven't seen, you know, that much of that from Russ, but you see it a lot from, because he's going to be the guy that has to know everything. So, yeah, it'll be tough for him, but I think he's such a good, quick thinker. And like you said, rookie year, passing out notes. The other thing about him, remember this, when he got to Wisconsin, he transferred from NC State to Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So he'd been there, what, 2 months practicing? I don't know if he went there for spring training, but he was there for camp. He was elected a captain.
Yeah.
After having been there for 2 months. So that's the kind of leadership that you
yeah.
get from him.
I would say in a transition like this with a new offense, new terminology, he's the perfect guy to have. I do love the assistance from our texters. Bob, I read an article about Rory McIlroy. His head is so small that he has to get custom-made hats. I don't know if that's a hint, but that's nice of him. And then, Dave, you can double date with Bob and Taylor Trammell, is what they're saying. And they're
sounds like a lovely evening.
they're referring to our next guest, Cody Barton, scheduled to join us here at the top of the hour. They're still out there on the practice field, so we'll see what time he wanders over. But we are scheduled to speak with him as we continue with Wyman and Bob live from the VMAC on 710 ESPN Seattle.